Trust Business Lunch. Happy Friday to you on WGN. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. This is John Williams, and Anna DeVlantis is ready to roll after our Wintrust Business Lunch. We start this day with Tom Gimbel, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Visit thelasallenetwork.com, a regular contributor to the Business Lunch. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I'm great, John. How are you? I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
I did. I'm looking forward to the end of the year. I trust you are as well. And then, like everybody, please, 2021, get here.
Fresh start, my man. Fresh start.
So I would imagine businesses that are thinking along those lines are thinking, okay, when do people come back and how?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the news of the vaccine, and I saw today that they believe that they'll be giving the first ones in the United States next week, is really motivating, and I think it's good for both the economy and the human spirit. What I'm seeing in talking to our clients is that most companies that aren't back already are going to come back in January, maybe not even February, until the vaccine is in wide distribution.
Come back? You mean literally come back into the offices?
Correct. People will be coming back into the office in 2021, John.
I'm interested to hear you say that, because I think that's been a big question mark. What does that look like, and how do you prepare for it? What are you telling people? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so there's a few different mentalities. One is, hey, this is working, and we're going to try and lower our footprint of real estate, and we're going to let people work remote. The other is, it's fine for a short period of time, but for collaboration and innovation, not having people together is really not an advantageous thing. And we're seeing more and more companies lean towards the latter. So where a lot of HR teams and leadership are focusing is how we get people over the fear, and maybe even more important, John, than the fear is the contentment they have of working from home.
What do you mean by that?
People are saying, it's okay. I'm getting up. I'm working in my, I got my underwear on below, and I'm just wearing a dress shirt for the Zooms, and this is okay. But the employee isn't realizing that the lack of collaboration, the lack of teamwork, and continuity is, in the long run, going to hurt corporate growth.
Yeah, I wonder if competitiveness is going to drive this. The companies that get back sooner might be more innovative, might be more aggressive, might be more capable.
And I think what's going to drive, and the interesting study on this will be, John, is that companies are going to be afraid in the short term of people quitting because they want to be at home. But in the long term, the companies that are back in the office, assuming everybody's healthy and the vaccines are working, is that the companies, once we get over that initial hump of going back into the office, the companies where people have the social interaction, where they're going to work again, where they're going out to different places to lunch, where they're having a happy hour drink after work with coworkers, where they have the ear of their boss live, real time, that is going to be the driver that's actually going to attract employees to companies, because that's a huge myth that and you're reading the articles like I am, John, that depression is up, suicide is up, mental awareness people are worried about. That's not because people are going to work, it's because people are staying home.
Yeah, I wonder what the score is on that. You alluded to the fact that people are more content to stay at home. Might be hard to get them back into the office. Does the data support that? It would seem to me like some people must be itching to get out of their homes, depending on what their domestic situation is like.
Well, and that's a big thing, right, is if you're living in a small apartment and you don't have a lot of outside space, maybe. But there is a sense of, look, the majority of Americans don't want to go work out, even though we know that it makes us feel better and we'll live longer. So knowing that you're itching to get into an office and be around people may not be enough to drive people to actually get showered, dressed, and commute 45 minutes each way. It's very similar to going to work out. And those are the psychological challenges that people will face until they get back in the rhythm.
Yeah, inertia can be, in its own way, a compelling thing, and I think they'll be up against that because now they've gotten used to the way it's been since March. You got to remind people, no, here's what you do. You get up, you brush your teeth, you find a pair of slacks that match your tie, and off you go. Let's pick it up here in just a minute. On a phone line, Tom Gimble, founder and CEO of the LaSalle Network. Tom, you've been talking about how businesses need to get ready for people to come back to work this year. And you talked about the hybrid model and also maybe a more in-person model where they're actually going to be in the offices. Do you have a timeline or some targets for that?
My guess is that it'll be in the second quarter. I think that if the vaccine, if what we read and hear in the news is accurate, that they'll start giving the vaccine to the elderly and then the first responders in the next two, three, four weeks. And so you figure that it'll probably be widely distributed sometime end of the first quarter, early part of the second quarter. And so I think companies are really going to start coming back in the second quarter.
Hope to hear that. You're also assuming that there are jobs for people to come back to. What are you hearing about that? Jobless claims picked up again.
John, unemployment dropped under 7%. It was as high as 15, 16, 17% 6 months ago. And I get that we're not adding as many as people would like and economists would like, but we're seeing a healthy economy, and we're adding over 200,000 jobs a month. I think that the naysayers are a little bit crazy, and everybody wants to be critical of every part of Washington, D.C., but there are jobs out there. Now, there might not always be a job that you want that's perfect for you, but, you know, we were raised by our parents, at least some of us in this generation, to take some things that are given to you and run with it and create your own opportunity.
What's your guess on the stimulus or whatever we're going to call it? What's this thing going to look like?
My guess is that there's going to be one last stimulus bill that will happen after the inauguration, that we'll see that in early February just to get a hit, that they want to make a statement and a mark, and it'll get approved. And we'll see that'll keep the economy going. I think what they want to make sure is that the economy is healthy riding into the vaccine being distributed in wide masses. So we'll get one more. It'll look good for the consumer. We'll add on another $1 trillion worth of debt, and somewhere down the road we'll figure out how to pay for it. But I think that'll get us to the summer, and then we'll be in good shape.
You don't think it's going to happen? Nothing before Christmas? Not even unemployment supplements?
Yeah, I would doubt it with the animosity that exists right now. Maybe there's an unemployment supplement, but I just don't see that happening, and I don't think it would come in until second week in January anyways. And at that point in time, I think that the division between the two parties is going to say, why do it? And you'll get it in that third week in January, and then people will get their money the first week in February.
I'm rooting against you on that. I'm not arguing with you, but I sure would like to see people get some money before Christmas.
Well, I think, you know, the interesting thing is if you know it's coming, that might be just as good psychologically as actually getting it. And, you know, we'll see what consumer spending is going to do over the next 3 weeks as well. So there's needing the money, there's wanting the money, and then there's what you do with the money. And all of those have yet to be shown. The important thing is that we'll have a peaceful change of power in Washington, D.C., and we're going to have some sort of stimulus package in the first quarter. And I'd say most importantly is that the unemployment rate continues to fall and there's jobs there for people, because as jobs go, so goes this economy. And that's really what we need to keep going.
How important in all of this to you, say that trillion-dollar stimulus, how important is the control of the Senate? Is it going to happen one way or the other?
I think that I actually think that a divided Congress and executive branch is really important. And what we saw with Reagan in the 80s and Clinton in the 90s is when you have opposite parties in power of each branch, the economy tends to do really, really well. And that would be a nice counterbalance. Whether you agree with the politics of the senators or the politics of either party is irrelevant. The fact that a divided executive and legislative branch tends to bode itself very well for this country economically, and that would be a real positive to see.
I suppose when the new administration comes in, too, I don't see Joe Biden tweeting a lot. Just the temperature will go down. Donald Trump won't disappear, but this is my own view of this thing. His every utterance won't be news because he won't be the president of the United States anymore. And I don't know if that'll impact businesses per se. We might get more regulations, but I can just feel the sort of tension go down if if we get past January 22nd.
Well, that's an interesting thing of the there will be less tweeting. That's what we all think and believe. The real question will be, is have the country and the news cycles become addicted to it, and will there be tweets, while they might not be causing such a stir emotionally, will there still be that distribution model that's the way the world's going to be from now on, and how we respond to that, number one. Number two that we didn't mention is there was talk that the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party is really going to push for forgiveness of some sort of the student loans. And I think that if that happens, then you'll see a dip in the market, and that could infect the labor market.
Does it matter to you if that forgiveness is 10,000 or 50,000? It's not going to be 50,000. That number gets thrown out there. 10,000 is the number we're hearing. You think $10,000 would impact the markets? That would set us back?
Yeah, I think it trades itself on where it's a warning sign of what that side of the political spectrum wants to do. And if that gets passed, you're going to start seeing that there is an anti-business sentiment and forgiving debt type of mentality, and that has such ripple effects beyond the it's not $10,000 for one person and saying that's not a big deal. You're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars and a political aspect of saying that people don't have to pay off their debts. That's a problem.
I could go back and forth with you all day long on this because there's just so many different points and counterpoints. I tend to agree with you, though. I think if you sign a contract, if you borrow money, you have an obligation to pay it back, and if you can, you should. It's unfortunate, however, that you look around and see so many people who have signed deals they just cannot honor, or honoring them is going to hinder their economic vitality for decades to come. Isn't the theory, Tom, that if we help them out now, they'll be able to buy cars and houses, and that'll actually stimulate the economy?
But we act like student debt is a new phenomenon. It's been going on since colleges and having to fund it and pay for it. So the dollars may have gotten bigger, but the actual aspect of taking out debt and doing it, whether it's credit card debt, we've had that crisis, or buying houses you can't afford, or cars or vacations, is we've got to get to a point where, you know, people don't want to pay for their college. You know, perception is that people may be, oh, I don't want to pay for my college debt, but I'm still going on my vacation to Napa Valley for the week. Well, you know, that, there's a problem there fundamentally of saying you don't want to pay for what you've already committed to doing, but you still want to be able to take the money. You know, if you were going to lend money to your brother-in-law, John, because he was broke and needed the money to pay for their mortgage and food for his family, and then you found out that he was going away with buddies to Vegas, would you be excited about that?
I would be very upset about that, Tom.
So I don't think it's that different.
All right, but how about this? What about this targeted relief then? Because I know that people getting college educations come from middle and upper income brackets, but those graduates aren't making a ton of money. I wonder if we could find a way to target the family's wealth or that individual's wealth and help those that are at least most needy.
I don't dispute that one bit, is that we need to do that, and that's a fundamental change. But part of it is going forward, and part of it is, are you going to do it on a look-back period? And that gets really complicated of where you draw the sand, and it's buyer beware. They made the commitment. If you went and got a degree in music, and now you're working in accounting, right, it's not the government's fault that you got a degree in something that you thought was fun, and then now you can't use it. And it's not America's job to pay for that. And I think that's where the big conflict is.
Tom Gimbel is with the LaSalle Network. Visit thelasallenetwork.com. Nice to talk to you, Tom. Let's visit again soon.
You got it. Stay healthy.
Dow has picked up from some of its losses. It's trading almost even. It was down a couple hundred earlier. Full market report for you coming up in about 10 minutes here on WGN on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jason Katz joins us now, wealth advisor, principal at Bartlett Wealth Management. Bartlett1898.com is the website to find these good people. Jason, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Real good. Wealth management. Also, you're a CPA. You're an accountant, too, by trade, right?
Yep. I'm a CPA and a CFP.
I've got some accounting questions as we get ready to turn the year. Unemployment compensation is or is not counted as income? Will I pay taxes if I got unemployment benefits? I hear him. I don't know if he hears us right now. Let's try it again. Jason, can you hear us okay?
I can hear you now.
Hey, we're on the air. Fair enough. My question was, does unemployment compensation count as a taxable event? Do you pay taxes on that?
Yes, you actually do, which is a common misconception. But, yes, it is a taxable income, just like wages would be.
What about stimulus? If I got $1,200, will I count that as income?
No, that's actually not taxable. It's actually a refundable tax credit. So just think of it as a non-taxable income item, so not anything you really need to worry about.
And what people did was they got a check or a card. I mean, they probably spent that money, but they don't have to worry about it. They don't have to account for it, nothing like that.
No, actually not. But, you know, when you do file your tax return, take a look at it, because there is a chance that you were due a little bit more than maybe what you got. Maybe you didn't get credit for a dependent child. So when you do your tax return, take a look at that and see if there's any more that you are due as part of that stimulus.
Here in Illinois, thousands and thousands of people have been the victims of fraud. The Illinois Department of Employment Security has been riddled with people getting notice that they are getting some sort of unemployment benefit, and they did not. Someone's stolen their identity, and they're cashing in. The problem is those people are now going to get, I believe, 1099s. Do you have any advice for them tax-wise?
You know, they will have to report that income and then likely report it negatively to take it off their income. I would recommend that they call the unemployment department and discuss that specific issue with them to see if they can get the 1099 from either not being issued or being corrected.
Yeah, it's going to be such a complication for people, because these are difficult to find. It's difficult to get through to these agencies and find the person that can help you, but that is going to be a problem for a lot of people. And then what about the people who I just wonder, for small businesses, what other tax considerations they have this year?
Yeah, certainly. You know, a lot of people did start their own big business this year, hung out their own shingle, and you know, it's a little bit different than when you're getting a paycheck. You know, one thing that I like to recommend is keeping track of your expenses. You know, there's some things like your home office, which can be a deduction that you've never really considered before, that you couldn't really take against your wages. For business owners, they get that opportunity. So keeping track of things like computer purchases and home office and even your cell phone usage, if you can say, hey, that was for business use, it could be a legitimate deduction against your business income.
Well, if I have a 2,000-square-foot home and 150 of those square feet are now the office I've been working in since March, can I prorate something and deduct that amount of square footage from my taxes, something like that?
Yeah, that's how it works. There's a couple different ways to calculate it. There's a safe harbor method, and then there's specifically allocating things like your property taxes and mortgage interest. But, yeah, that's basically how it is. It's done on a square foot basis. And, again, this is really for people who have their own business, where if you're an employee and you get a W-2, this is really not going to be allowed as a deduction for you. But if for business owners, certainly it can be.
What about employees who have worked out of state, or people have been moving around, and some of them in the Chicago area have gone to Indiana or Michigan or Wisconsin? What determines which taxes you pay or whose state you pay them in?
Yeah, typically you pay tax in the state that you work in. And like you said, that's changed for a lot of people. So you really have to look at which states have reciprocity, which means that they have kind of a deal where you'll just pay tax to your resident state. So for Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Kentucky, and Iowa all have reciprocity agreements. So basically what that means is that wherever you were, that's where you're going to pay taxes. Or whatever your resident state is. For those that aren't the other states, you could have a tax obligation in those states for which you would report your income to that state. And hopefully there's a credit mechanism so that you don't have to double pay that tax. And usually that is the case.
Yeah, right. But I'm sorry. So are you saying if we have reciprocity with one of those states, can you list those again for us?
Yeah. Michigan, Wisconsin, Kentucky, and Iowa.
You did not mention Indiana, but fair enough. If Illinois has reciprocity with those states, then I'm going to pay income taxes based on Illinois rather than on those states. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, if you're residing in those states. Yep.
I guess good for you if you're in the low-income tax state, and too bad for you if you're in the high-income tax state in that case. But you don't get to decide.
Yep.
I understand that point. Any last words of wisdom from you, Jason, for our listeners tax-wise when we turn the corner here?
No, just, you know, keep track. If you did start a business this year, just keep track of those expenses. It's something new. And also keep track of where you were when you were working so that when you go to prepare your tax returns, that you know where the tax your taxable income is going to be reportable to.
Fair enough. That's Jason Katz, wealth advisor and the principal with Bartlett Wealth Management. Bartlett1898.com is their website. Thanks for your help today, Jason.
All right, thank you.
I'm not looking forward to any of this. And actually, my situation is pretty simple. For some of you, it will be eminently complicated, as was 2020. Let's head into the WGN Radio newsroom with more business news. Help me out on that one more time there, Pete. Steve Grzanich has got the latest.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Riverwoods-based Discover Financial Services is eyeing a vacant former Target store in the Chatham neighborhood for a call center with as many as 1,000 jobs. Crane says Discover is in late-stage talks on a lease for the 127,000-square-foot property at 85th and Cottage Grove. Target shut down the store there in 2018. United Airlines is reportedly telling some of its flight attendants, whose colleagues test positive for COVID-19, to keep flying and monitor for symptoms. Flight attendants have told Reuters that most of them feel that protocol is unsafe. United's major rival, American Airlines, by contrast, removes all crew members from service when they've worked with an infected person. Meanwhile, United CEO Scott Kirby says he doesn't expect the Chicago-based airline to cut more jobs, even if there's no more relief from Congress. United's already eliminated about 22,000 jobs, or one-fourth of its workforce, through voluntary exits, layoffs, and furloughs. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, 12:52. Anna DeVlantis after 1 o'clock. Tim Tutton, one of her guests, the guy that runs the Hideout. He is a fun conversation, whatever you are talking to him about. And sometimes when you're talking to him about it, you're not sure what you're talking about. But they will be talking about how you can take in some music in Chicago and help support the performing arts. Leah Rippey joins us now. Leah is the Vice President of Marketing and Communications at the Chicago Zoological Society's Brookfield Zoo. This is CZS, Chicago Zoological Society. Let's talk about the lights at the Brookfield Zoo. Leah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, John. This is the 39th year of holiday magic. Can you believe that?
I suppose I can, but you know, the number that impresses me, though, tell me if I remember this correctly, is that this is like the most lights at any one place or any one zoo in America or something like that.
Well, not quite, but we sure do have quite a few lights, over a million lights that you can see, including we have 662 Christmas trees that were so beautifully decorated with supporters from the community and from corporations that you can come see. We have larger-than-life illuminated animal sculptures like a bear, a bison, and a giraffe. We have a 600-foot light tunnel that's really amazing to walk through. That's all synchronized to music. We have a 40-foot tree that's illuminated and a 20-foot orb that guests can walk through, and we've had quite a few engagements happen within that orb. And also new this year, we have, John, a game of gnomes where the kids can search for 24 gnomes that are hidden in kind of unique spots all along the zoo.
That sounds like all of that a really good idea. I've been to Zoo Lights at the Brookfield Zoo on a couple of occasions. I was not there last year, but I just remember being so impressed with how many trees were decorated. I don't recall the 600-foot, that's two football fields long light tunnel, huh?
You got it. Yeah, it's quite something. So we had that last year, and so we brought it back again this year out of much popular demand.
How do people do this? Will they be in their cars, or are they walking? I guess the kids are out. You're all running around.
Nope, you're outside, you're walking around. Now we are following the phase 4 guidelines by the state, so we can't have any of our buildings open, but you can absolutely enjoy the grounds here at Brookfield Zoo.
You said phase 4. Is it phase 3 or phase 4 we're talking about? phase?
Well, we're, I think it gets a little bit confusing. I think we're in phase four, but tier three.
Ah, that's it. That's the difference. Well, as long as we know what the rules are when we get there. So will we have our masks on the whole time we're moving about Brookfield Zoo?
You absolutely should if you're not able to social distance between yourself and the other person within 6 feet. Before you get here, John, we do want you to go on our website and secure those time tickets because we are operating, you know, on a reduced capacity schedule. So you'll want to make sure you visit our website, secure your ticket and your time parking before you come into the zoo.
3 to 9 p.m. Is it 7 days a week? How often can I go there? How many days of the week?
3 to 9 p.m. It is select nights. We only have 14 nights left, so you want to check out the website. A number of days are sold out, but check around the 16th to the 20th and the 26th to 31st of this month. There's plenty of availability, so we'd love to have you come on out.
Are you able to do food and beverage?
We sure are. We have outdoor kiosks that you can purchase food and beverage. Even if you have those last-minute shopping needs on your list, we have all kinds of outdoor gift kiosks that you can purchase little stocking stuffers, including light-up masks.
What's the Insta spot? What's the one spot, if I went there to take a picture, you would recommend I not miss?
Oh, goodness, yeah. Doing it for the Instagram, absolutely. I'd have to say the Orb. And we have a couple of opportunities while Santa can't be here. You can even get a selfie with Santa at two different locations where we have a Santa cutout.
We don't get to see the animals then, or are some of them still outdoors? Will we see animals?
Yeah, John, there are very few animals that you can see. This is really focusing on the lights and walking around in the great outdoors. You can see, you know, lions and tigers and the bison, but again, this is really focused on the lights.
Let's not forget we've got two great zoos in Chicagoland, both of them lit up very nicely. How are you all hanging on? How's business going?
You know, like everybody else, John, it's been a really, really tough year. But we are just so grateful of the supporters that have come alongside us. And if you would like to help us, you can visit our website, ccs.org/support Brookfield Zoo. There's a number of ways you can do that. You can adopt an animal. You can, you know, maybe align your Amazon program with the Amazon Smile program. And we also have created an Amazon wish list. So if you'd like to help us offset some expenses that we would have to incur to help provide some engagement for the animals, you can check out all those lists on our website.
Yeah, think about that. Engagement for the animals, food for the animals. You may not go to the zoo. The zoo still has animals need to be fed and cared for every day. So let's not forget these creatures. Chicago Zoological Society, Leah Rippey, thanks for joining us. Remember now, if you want to find out more, go online to make your timestamp reservation for Brookfield Zoo. It's CZS, as in Chicago Zoological Society, CZS.org. Well done, Leah. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for joining us.